Okay, Chris, the best line of our on-ramp this morning, aside from a couple of quality words I used, I would say you asking what episode we're in of the podcast was the best. You're behind like 3 weeks. Where have you been?
Maybe I've said it before, it's an extended reflective practice. I feel like I'm in with you, so I don't know. I maybe my brain, it's a system of organization that's only important when I sort of sketch note some of our ideas, because honestly, I have a hard time kind of gathering where our conversation has flowed. Like I have to go back. It's funny. I have to go back and re-listen to parts. My other podcast, it feels a lot more compartmentalized. Like if I were to drop a name, I would like, oh yeah, I remember what we talked about. But this, dude, this is just way too fluid. So maybe it's just me not remembering what number we on. Maybe it's because it's not important. Maybe that system of organization maybe will be important to somebody else. Oh yeah, I remember in episode 22 they talked about, or I don't know.
That makes sense. I like that. Makes sense to me. Thanks for the on-ramp chat today. If people are new to the podcast, Chris and I do a little bit of talking before we hit broadcast. We need to check in. We need to get some things out, maybe that we're not gonna get out on the podcast the same way that we might. So, like when we're live, anyway. So it was a for me, selfishly, it was a great on-ramp. So thanks for that, Chris.
Yeah, you're welcome, man.
And I told you that I wanted to tell you something else, but we didn't have to do it on the on-ramp. So here it is. Two things. Number one, I thought it was really cool that you were able to do the hangout last week from the summit. There's something about you sitting in the high school on the floor against a wall with your device and just going freestyle. I actually thought it was going to be worse in terms of audio and connection, but it was fine. It was great. I loved that you took the time to do that. So that's episode 28, live at the summit. And then the second thing I wanted to talk about is so at the start of this week, or I don't know what, it's Saturday today, so I don't know if the week's over or not, but on Monday or Tuesday, I saw something on Twitter. And normally when I see something that I want to send to you, I'll do it via Twitter. I'll hit a button and it'll say, share through DM or something, and I share it with you. So I go to share this image or this tweet, and Twitter tells me that there is no user with your name. And so I'm like, okay, he's gone. He left Twitter. And he told me he was going to do that. He told everybody he was going to do that. We were under the impression that you're going to wait till the end of this month, but that didn't happen. Okay, so aside from that initial, oh, great, okay, he's out of the loop now in terms of Twitter. Then I thought, I had this idea, and I'm sure it's not new to people. I'm sure it's been talked about before. And you're not the first educator, I think, to go hip deep into, a social media app and then totally leave it. So I'm not claiming any of this is new, but to me it's new. So here it is. I thought I had this like feeling, this idea that you have like evolved in a way. You're post social media educator. It's because I'm still stuck in the social media, and I'm not too upset with that. And I know that I waste some of my time using it. Like I'm aware of those things, some of the reasons that maybe got you to back away from it. But I just feel like you're in this place, having spoken to you since then, you're in this place of like, it's almost like you've just, as an educator, you've evolved past it. But then I think, well, I'd love to know how you plan on expanding your professional learning network. Even if you plan on expanding it, because we know you and I talked a little bit about this earlier, that using social media is a great way to get out of your silo in some ways. And it's a great way to build a network. It's global, it's anytime from anywhere. So those are just some things I wanted to drop and see, how you might respond to those.
As far as I can appreciate the comment, you know, post social media educator. I don't know. There's probably some interesting conversations there in the broader sense, because you and I have, and to be honest, you and I wouldn't be doing what we're doing right now. We wouldn't have this relationship had it not been accelerated by social media. We weren't email buddies. I didn't have your phone number prior to that. We weren't connecting that way. I was made aware of you through, there was a little bit of curiosity. Some ideation, like, what else do I want to do? What am I interested in doing? Someone mentioned to me, maybe I should check out podcasts. That might be something where I can kind of like expand my knowledge. Could be just interesting. I like to listen to stuff on my headphones when I'm doing work. So that kind of open and accidental curiosity led me into a space where I found you. And I've had, you know, it reminds me of a conversation that I had with Royan Lee, where he spoke to how his not his focus, but what he noticed about social media spaces and how he connected with them. He said originally he sort of, I guess in his analysis, post-analysis, was that those social media spaces was like a party that was going on all the time that you could arrive at 24/7, right? The situation that never sleeps, you can sort of go in there. And in doing so, you know, there you felt like you could jump in, jump out. Didn't necessarily feel that connection, that deeper connection of, and now I'm pushing out of what he said. But my take on that was there's a deeper responsibility there. And when you feel the accountability, that's where you can get to some of the deeper work, the better understanding, the stronger connections, the more interesting stuff. So my sort of passing or quick interest in podcasts was connected to in that exact same salad of social media using. And then my next idea that came out of that is like, well, how do I now reach out to that individual? So how do I, if I wanted to talk to Roland or Stephen Hurley was a part of that as well. I mean, Derek Rodenizer, I'm trying to think of some of the earlier people that I think it was probably you three that were my original reach out before I said, I think I can take this and now do it locally. And then I sort of brought it back and started connecting, podcasting on my own, still reaching out and getting some mentorship, some tutelage. So that whole process is interesting now to talk about in the light of how you framed it, whether it's, you know, being a post social media educator. That EdTech conference, I asked, so that one that we did the podcast from, I asked a few individuals when the opportunity presented, you're sort of doing learning and stuff like that, but you're meeting new people too, but you know, revealing a conversation that's been going on for a while, like everyone's talking about it, can sometimes create distance between you and the person, you know, having the ham sandwich across the table. So, you know, you're waiting for these moments of conversation to sort of try and expand your learning. And that was a really interesting exercise because I didn't go in and I wasn't using Twitter at that at all, like very little. Two or three times I was on there. Being in the moment with individuals and not saying, someone just posted something really cool to the hashtag EdTech Team Summit, whatever, seeking out humans in a space where there are humans is very different when you're not using social media to grease the wheels. So the conversation where what I was asking some teachers was a little bit of like this, like, is education now synonymous with social media? So I will say on the front end, you're shaking your head no, but that would be a fascinating conversation to put down at a table, because I really think that there's not a lot of wiggle space in there. Like to sort of, it would be a great debate. It would be a great debate. And I think in that debate, a lot of people would identify some of the sort of challenges that I'm sort of looking at right now by not using social media to connect with other both like and different minded people so that I can still continue my learning. And it's not, I mean, I can speak to it, some of the steps I've taken, but it's not simple. There's a whole lot of assumptions and things that are invisible when we use social media to connect, that when you step back from it and just say, I'm going to give this a ride, I can say it's a lot of work to stay connected with humans. A lot of work.
The reason why I was shaking my head, and you're right, it would be a great conversation. For example, in my context, in my school building, social media is not, it's not front and center. Like there are educators in the building who have now created an account for their class and for themselves, I guess, either or. And, you know, they're slowly like dipping their feet in the water. But if you sat at a staff meeting at my school and you said what you just said, they would probably look at you funny because that's just not their context. They're not there. There's a couple of people in the building who use it like quite frequently. I would say I'm one of them. And I still think that they look at me funny. And that like, and that's, I'm, that's just my perception. I could be wrong. I usually am wrong. So, but that's just my perception. So I think context is important, but you're right. I think it'd be a great conversation. Now here's the other thing. Yesterday in my school board in the afternoon, we had, it was our association's half day for professional learning. And the model that our association uses is like a conference style model. So teachers set up workshops and then other teachers can register for your workshop and then meet up with you and you run a workshop or you attend a workshop. And one of the workshops that was organized by our IT tech 21st century consultant was an innovation conference at one of the local high schools. I attended last year and I presented, but I did not attend this year. I stayed at my site and I participated in a workshop like on my in at my site. But I can tell you that if you were at the innovation conference, what you said would have resonated with a lot more people than if you were at my school, because I'm going to make like a correlation here that at the innovation conference, there were probably more people there who had a Twitter account and who were learning how to use it than the, like the percentage of people in my building in the same situation. You get what I'm saying? Like it will attract people that are interested in that or are already there and moving in that direction. Like I was looking at the pictures on Twitter, and in almost every picture, I recognize someone who is kind of in this space or open to this space or dipping their feet in. But, you know, while they're putting one foot in this space, their other foot is hip deep in stuff that is about innovation, iteration, creativity, you know, getting kids moving in a direction that's, you know, like 21st century, post 21st century, that type of thing. And I don't say that like as a slight to those who aren't doing that type of thing. It's just, you run in these circles with these people. And so I was seeing pictures of them, even if I've not met them, I see their picture. I know about their class Twitter handle because I follow them. You know what I'm saying? So I think it depends where you are in your journey and where you are learning and parking yourself to learn. But I think there's something refreshing about what you're doing. And that's coming from my perspective as someone who's not ready to let go of certain social media apps that I enjoy spending my time with. So it's, I know that some of it's a waste of time. I get that. I think that's part of maybe my way of coping with my life or what I'm experiencing at a particular time. That's where I spend energy. Like last night, I bought 2 merge cubes. Are you familiar with merge cubes?
I think I've seen them. Something to do with, does it create VR?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Talk it out though, because I've seen it. I don't know if I saw it way back. Was it ever a Kickstarter?
It may have been. I don't know for sure.
It seems to be a pretty hot item right now.
Yes. Okay. And before it was hot now, it was even hotter a few months ago in the States, because I remember seeing photos on Twitter of educators in the States going to Walmart and buying them for next to nothing and having carts full of these things. Like, I'm like, what is going on here? You know, like, it was a sale, $3 each, and teachers were buying them by the cart load to use in their classes. But it's a cube. I wish I had it with me in the office, but I don't. It's downstairs because I was playing with it last night in front of the TV. But it's a cube, and connected with certain apps, the cube turns into different things, like you know, the human heart. And there's some apps that you can play games with this cube. So it's VR. It's pretty cool. I think it's got some power in the classroom, and will be a great way to get kids interested in particular topics that they might not be interested in. It's just another cool way of learning for me, because, as you know, my passion, my purpose, when they come together, my passion involves the technology and that stuff. So I'm bringing it into the class to combine two things to make me a better teacher, in my opinion. So I've been seeing pictures, and then, you know, when I kind of looked into it here and there, it was just in the States. It wasn't available here, and I wasn't interested in spending my money, my low Canadian money, to get some stuff from the States. But recently, Michael Leonard, who I believe you've met at a mini summit or whatever, he purchased one or two of them, and he was tweeting about it, just saying that he got one or was getting one. And I said, hey, let me know how it goes when you use it. And he hasn't done that yet, but he did tell me where he got it from. So I went online, and I saw that Walmart Canada has them, so I ordered a couple of them, okay? So yesterday I went to go to my local Walmart to pick them up because they had arrived. And I was standing there, and there was a line beside me of people who were waiting to talk to the associate at customer service. And I just didn't want to stand there and stare around at my surroundings. So I pulled out my phone, checked my Twitter feed. Like, that's, you know, and I know that's not uncommon. People pull out their phone and start to engage themselves in something other than reality, and you've got the world happening around you. But I was at Walmart with people that I didn't know. I wasn't just about to lean over and start talking to somebody. So I pulled out my phone, started using it, and that's how I spent my time waiting for my cubes to arrive, was checking my Twitter feed, my Facebook feed, my email, and whatever. And so I guess I don't even know where I'm going with that. I guess the point is that I know that my time is spent there virtually. It could be spent in other places, but I choose to spend it there. You know what I mean? Like, it's a conscious choice. Hmm. I know that I, you know, sometimes I read my Twitter feed and it just bothers me. It doesn't even help me, right? Like, that happens too. Let's be honest about that. This, I don't know what you call it, but when you read what's going on with other people, everybody's showing their best, right? Yeah. My response is, why am I going to tell you otherwise? Like, I use that platform to share positive things, to share challenges with respect to my profession. But I'm not going to tweet out, I don't think, that I'm not going to tweet out that I woke up this morning on the wrong side of the bed and now I'm grumpy. Like, I'm just not going to do that. That's not what I'm using it for. But I recognize other people will use it for that. Anyway, I'm just digging deeper here and not getting anywhere fast. But my point is that there's something refreshing about seeing you move past it. There's something refreshing about that. I'm not 100% sure I know what it is yet, because I'm a person who needs to reflect. And then I'm going to let you have a word. And then if you'll let me, I would love to share how discomfort with something I recently did has led me to feel more comfortable about my way of being. So I'll just leave that there and let you jump in, see if you can dig me out of this hole.
I love it. I guess I'll jump in on the tail end there. That moment, I like the I like that idea of standing in a line as the litmus for how we use social media. Like, I like that. And I appreciate your statement as far as when I'm standing in a line, that's when I'm going to check my feeds. I totally get that. I think that opportunizing those moments is important, especially if you have a finite amount of time to get these things done. I appreciate that. Where I'm starting to play with in my own space is despite the fact that I could opportunize and say, yes, I could check a feed and it's funny, it's a bit of a blindness I'm playing with myself. I know at any given moment, I can download that app and go back to those spaces. I have to be honest, I'm completely aware of the fact that I could rebirth, if that's a word, my Twitter account and start connecting again. I could. I could rebirth my Insta. I could rebirth my Facebook. All of those things are sitting there in wait. They're all there. Part of, I guess, my process in building my awareness around how I use these things is exploring why I feel compelled to reconnect with it. And what is it that I'm seeking? So you texted me in essence, a message like, how you dealing with this? And I was being quite honest to you when I said, you know, it's mindfulness. It's what it is. I'm coming back to sort of, and I guess we could say reflection or mindfulness. If I were to split the hair there, I'd say mindfulness is putting you in the exact moment. Mindfulness holds you right in that moment. Reflection allows you to sort of build the layers out, if I were to sort of divide the two. So the mindfulness is just paying attention to everything in that moment that's compelling me to make a decision. And that's a space where I get caught up in my own head as far as getting meta about my meta, about my meta. Like, how many layers deep can I go? And I mean, you've called me on that before. Like, all right, Clough, thanks. It's also the thing that I've sort of mentioned before, you know, going to this past conference I was at. It's not that I'm cautious. I'm just aware of that if I throw down some way out there idea, if it's a bug bomb, then I'm not going to have conversation. It's just going to clear the room and people are like, oh, geez, I just wanted to know, you know, what was in your sandwich, buddy. I did not want to talk about postmodern use of social media and, you know, the death of shopping malls. So I'm aware of my meta layers is not necessarily a space that everyone wants to inhabit. I get that. So standing in the line, I like your example of standing in the line. On one hand, because I don't have, and I get it, it's a weird bit of naivety, I don't have those apps on my phone. I'm starting to look at what other things could I do when I was standing in line. And the reason I like your example is because I had to go grocery shopping midweek this week. It was just the timing. Normally I pick up groceries on the weekend. So this week was fractured in different ways. So a lot of the duties for the week were not on the right day, laundry. It's all out of whack. It's okay now, but you know the weeks I'm talking about where certain days, certain things are done, but then you have like these big event and you're like, okay, we have to work it around. So I'm doing grocery shopping midweek. And by the way, it's a lovely time to do grocery shopping. Gotta say, it ain't busy. You hit the grocery store, if you can, like 3:15 on a Wednesday. You're cruising the aisles. You're getting right up to the cash out. So I'm standing in line, unloading the cart. And there's another customer pulls up behind me. And as many customers do, like the old style of standing in line at the grocery store was reading the periodicals there. Like, you know, the National Enquirer, the Star, People magazine. And you'll notice, I mean, there's not as many as what used to be. They have a smaller selection there now, but they're still there on either side of the aisle. And there was an individual standing behind my cart as I'm unloading the cart. And they kind of pulled up and bumped my cart. And then my cart bumped me. And that person was aware of it. And they were apologetic. They're like, sorcerer. So they said, I was trying to read that article. And I look over at the article and it was something about Kylie Jenner on People magazine. And I sort of read it for a second. And then in the apology, so that's like a closed moment. Like there's a there's a beat. They bump the cart, they bump me, there's the apology, it's cool, and then you sort of move on. I go back to putting the groceries on the thing. But instead, I'm looking at this article here, and something in me turned back to the person hadn't met, Linda. Hello, Linda, by the way. Person's name was Linda. I sort of go back, I'm like, that's so ridiculous. And like, do you think that? And so to state it's so ridiculous isn't a hook. But then for whatever reason, I turn like, do you think it's ridiculous? And then we ended up having about a 10-minute conversation in the line. Now, there's nothing profound about this, but it's what we do in lines that I'm starting to examine my social behavior. I'm starting to sort of look at, and I get it. There may be some people, if I was standing in line, I'm like, yeah, I really don't want to talk to that dude. I'm not into it. I think that's fine. But I'm also looking to expand those spaces. So what are the things that I would have done standing in line waiting? What are the things I would do when I'm solo waiting? And what I kept on coming back to was the habit of pulling out my phone and going on an app. So this is the bigger, broader kind of sense of, you know, what this, the amount of space that this takes up in my world. And that's been the really interesting experiment throughout this past week, where I will say getting up in the morning, when I get up in the morning, and maybe that was also why the week felt a little bit broken. Maybe it was okay, we had different jobs different days, but maybe it was me going through a little bit of withdrawal. I would get up. I'll get up in the morning, typically get up. I'll come downstairs. I got some medications that I have to take, have a coffee, pick up my phone. Like that's a pattern. And ritualistic learning and ritualistic habits are good. I mean, there's some that are entirely based on survival, right? But the ones that, I'm not going to say they don't serve a purpose, but that I've kind of painted with a purpose that I'm not sure I fully believe in. Those are the ones I'm starting to sort of space out a little bit. And it was funny, like I'm really aware in the day of when I'm triggered to go check social feeds. And not only time of day, but contextually, as in what would be going on in a moment that would make me go check my social feed. And my whole pursuit of, and you know, I broadly called it breaking up with the internet, was getting to a place where I'm in control of self and not feeling that addiction factor. That's what I sort of look at, the addiction factor. Like right now I should be doing this without really processing that right now. Like right now, I'll tell you right now, I entirely feel like I should be talking with you. I do. I feel like right now I've put that in there, that Saturday morning, sometime on the weekend, sometime that week, I want to talk with you. At some point I could reevaluate that. There could be something that makes me question it. I think the difference being is that that's a decision that is now correlative. I would have to speak to you about that. We are the two humans now sort of exploring whatever this reflective practice is. Not having that on the other side of this decision has been really interesting. I don't have anyone that I'm bouncing it off of that sort of says, hey, human, are you actually making really good human decisions here? So that's been a fascinating little bit of exploration. But standing in line, I talked with Linda. I said hello to Linda. And it's not that I wouldn't do that. Like I connect in those ways. But it was interesting how we connected. And that moment of, I'm going to give this a try. I'm going to say hello to this person. Maybe a conversation will ensue. Maybe the checkout person will be completely frustrated because we're cracking off telling jokes for like 10 minutes. But I'm messing with those spaces now. And it ain't comfortable. Like I won't say that I'm in love with not using these things, because I'm starting to find some real traps in my day. Kind of like how use of social media sets the context for a whole day. And it's pretty freaky.
It's been my experience that people generally don't want to talk to me when they first meet me. They say that my appearance, I wouldn't say the word frightens. It doesn't frighten them. My appearance is not one of a welcoming nature. So after they talk to me, I've had people say, you know, when I first saw you, I didn't think you'd be this friendly. So I wanted to throw that out there because when I look at you, I don't get that vibe that you might not be a friendly guy to talk to in a line. I'm taking this conversation, I'm twisting it a little bit because
I want you to twist it though, because it's funny in that space. I know I talked a long time. Here's the thing I'm starting to realize. It's actually, that part isn't actually about you. That's the funny thing there, right? Like, because I've had people say similar things to me. But I'm starting to realize it actually isn't about you. You can make it about delivering something different. Like, am I actually projecting something? Am I doing this thing? But I'm starting to realize this is actually something that's in my psyche, but it's not actually, so it's in my psyche in sort of thinking about connecting with other people. But this is a defense mechanism, I think, in a lot of ways, that's part of our genetics, shaped by learning. It's that idea of danger, fear, want to keep myself safe. Because I could totally see, I can exist in both spaces. You have an intensity to you. But I also know the other side of it as equally, that you're open and social and you're a kind person. Like, I have both of those pieces that work. I make a decision to interact with the whole you. I don't know if that happens as easily in first time connections. So yeah, you got an intensity, but I see that in the same space as cool. He obviously likes the Jays and cool. We're connected by podcasting, and you know what? We're dads like those other things. I know. Is it a new cap? Yeah? No, I see. Oh, your audio's off. Are you on mute?
I was on mute. Don't tell McGuire that I was not a ninja. I'm doing this because I'm going to use this image right now, which you see here, as the thumbnail for the podcast.
I love it. So go where you're going to go.
It is a new hat. It's their spring training hat. I bought it when they were in spring training. I went to spring training a few years ago with my family. We went to Florida and we were able to get tickets to see the Jays at spring training. So ever since then, it's been a tradition that every year I buy their spring training hat when they come out. Anyway, where was I going with this? I have no idea. You said I'm a person of intensity. Mm-hmm. It's ingrained in our DNA that someone like me might frighten people and they might not want to talk to me in line. I am fully aware of the other people around me that appear to be intimidating as well. And that helps me understand and it helps me understand what other people might feel. And so I used to take major offense. I'm not offended anymore. I'm not offended anymore because what am I supposed to do? Like, if I look at a particular human and there's something, a warning bell goes off in my head for no rational reason, right? Like, I've never met them before. They've done nothing to show me that they are a threat. Nevertheless, my body, my mind says, this looks threatening, stay away, okay? And that is heightened when I have my kids with me. So when I'm in a store, in a line, and there's a cute little infant or baby or whatever you want that's being held by their parent and is staring at me doing their thing where they're slobbering and they're smiling at you, I smile back, I mess around with the kid, but I don't say anything. Because I don't know what those people are thinking. I don't know whether they like having me behind them or in front of them. I don't know. And I don't really care. I'm aware that they may see me as a threat for whatever reason. My intensity, the fact that I'm not smiling, I don't know. But it helps me understand because I feel that way sometimes too. And there have been times where even I could see it in my children's faces, like we'll be somewhere and somebody will be behaving a particular way and my kids will be like, can we move away? And I'm like, just stay close to me. I'm not going anywhere. Like, stay over here. Daddy's just going to check this out. Like, I want to make sure they're good, but I'm like, why are we feeling this way? What's happening? So I try to examine it in those few minutes. And sometimes sometimes it's valid. Like sometimes I'll see guys freaking out on their kids. It's usually guys. I don't really see the ladies do it, but they'll be freaking out and I'll be like, okay, let's move over here because I don't need you to hear what he might say. And I've been guilty of that. Okay. Like I'm not pretending I'm dad of the year or whatever. I've been guilty of like being stern with my kids, and that probably doesn't help the way people might perceive me. But you got to do what you got to do, right? Short of like hitting your kid or doing something like abusive and against the law, people are going to do what they need to do, and most people aren't going to stop them. So I don't know. I think I like that we've kind of entered down this road a little bit, because who else am I going to talk to about this, right? Like it just has come up. And being a teacher, you and I are working with different people all the time. We're meeting all kinds of parents, all kinds of kids. Like I look at my class this year and it is just like I've got the whole gamut in there, you know, shy, outgoing, sometimes rude, very polite. Like it's like all over the place. And that's who they are, right? That's what has come to the room that I'm in with them. And we have to learn to work together. And that's the message. And so when I'm out, you know, I'll see someone and I will feel something. And I'm like, okay, well, is my feeling valid? What is it about? What is it about this feeling? Where is it coming from? Why is it making me think so hard at this moment? And when I'm not with the kids, it's harder to analyze. When I'm with the kids, it's easier because I'm with my children, right? And I want to protect my children. I want my children to see the positive, not the negative. And I don't want them to feel fear, even though they're feeling it. And sometimes it's really good learning moments, and sometimes you don't want to be learning in that moment. I don't know. I just think the awareness is good. Like at the end of all this, the awareness is good. It's important to be aware. And I know you're talking about meta upon meta upon meta, and some people don't want to go there, right? Like they just don't want to go there because it might feel uncomfortable. It might take them to a place that they don't want to go. But I know when I go meta, it helps me in the long run. Or at least I try to make it help me in the long run.
Yeah, I'm not. I think what I've come to understand or accept is that more options don't necessarily make more people happy. I like your example about when you're with your children, it really crystallizes the decision-making process. Like you realize that it comes down to a small set, 1, 2, 3, maybe, you know, 4 or 5 things. Here's how we're going to operate in the world when we're sort of moving through the world. You know, even yesterday, walking through the grocery store parking lot with my kids, right away, I'm in, okay, single file, we're going to stay to the right. I'm checking to make sure neither one of my, you know what I mean? You're moving almost militarily through a space that could present a danger, right? And more likely to present a danger than other spaces, despite we're in the grocery store, has a certain list of sort of rules of engagement. We're in the parking lot. And then you get to the car, seatbelts on. Okay. Stop leaning over, punching your sister, like all the other, the constancy of reinforcement of those rules. And I get that as a parent and I get that as an educator. I think that the conversation I come back to is, at some point, I want to make sure, and where I'm checking in with myself is that if that reductionism that happens with rules, which can be connected with habits and rituals, has it officially handicapped my view of my world? So where either those rules have, I want to say the word destroyed, but it's not destroyed, have the rules officially killed off opportunity. So what rules do that? But also, is it also keeping me from just understanding what's really going on around me? And I've talked to people that, you know, they've even at this conference saying, no, you know what? Like when I stand in the line, part of me sort of using my phone, my plan is to not engage. Like if I do go into my phone, that is my intent, and I'm being successful in that, and I feel safe, and I feel, and I'm absolutely cool with that. I'm just flipping that for myself. And there could be, I still, you know, there are times when I don't want to connect with people. There are times where I want time for me. There's time when I just want to connect with my own children. When you were mentioning, when you're mentioning about, you know, when you're with your children and you're sort of teaching them to move through the world, I include that, but I also include the, I want you to stand in the grocery store and say hello and connect with Linda and have a conversation. I fall to that side quite often, actually. And I feel that I'm a bit of an outlier in those spaces because other parents have said, no. I had a parent one time tell me, this was in my school context. So these are high school students, in very sort of in a very matter of fact fashion, I still instruct my kids not to talk to strangers. And they followed it up with, because you know, kids get snatched. And I can appreciate all the feeders that are going into that idea because it triggers me as a parent. My educator side is triggered in a different way. And then me separate, I almost hate to put it this way, but me separate, my third mind, just as Chris, processes it in a totally different way and starts to sort of like, is triggered by that statement in a different way. Now, I didn't push back too hard on that because, you know, in these meetings, I'm not there to sort of broaden their philosophical view of being a parent. But it really gave me a moment to say, like, yeah, that's not how I parent. That's not where I go. But I can appreciate it. I can appreciate that point of view.
Can I shift gears a little bit?
Do it. Because I have another shift too at the tail end I want to throw your way. So you go.
Okay. So just being mindful of time, we don't have a lot based on our template of how we do the podcast. But I'm willing to go a little bit longer if it's good with you.
Yeah, I can go to... how about, daughter, we gotta go do some art. How about let's say like another 20 minutes. You good with that?
Sure. Okay. I can do that. Okay. Last night I shared with you via email because I can't do it on Twitter. I shared with you an email about a video that I saw on YouTube. It was Casey Neistat talking with two other guys, I think in Montreal. So he was recently in Montreal for a talk or something he was doing, and he ended up on this podcast with these two guys. And I didn't really do, it was one of those things where I was scrolling through YouTube and it was a suggested video. I watched the video, a little bit of it, and I sent you the link and I basically told you, watch just the first 2 minutes and 15 seconds. It's all you need to know to spark a really good conversation. And they started the talk with Casey and they talked about ideas being like ice cubes. And when you've got an idea and you're holding it in your hand and you start to pass your idea around, that ice cube eventually just, it melts away and is gone. Okay. Then, so they started that talk about the ice cubes, ideas as ice cubes and how they melt faster the more you pass them along to people. Then they talked about creativity and collaboration. And they said something, and I caught the essence of it, which really resonated with me as an educator. They talked about creativity and collaboration. They talked about creativity by committee and how that wrecks creativity. So in the context of, you know, you are a creative person and you have an idea, but then, you know, you're forced to collaborate with five other people, and that collaboration does something to your original creative idea, and it becomes, in your way, from your perspective, it no longer becomes creative because now you've got like four or five other people who are diluting your idea. That's one takeaway. The other takeaway is that they related this to collaboration, and they talked about collaboration in the same way. What is collaboration? If collaboration is bringing people together and having people jockey for position on how they want something to happen, or how something they want to create will come to life, something gets lost in that translation. But what Casey said really hit home to me. Casey said, and right now he's establishing a collaborative space in New York City for creators. He wants creators in New York City and anybody who comes to that space to have a place to express their creativity and to create. And he basically, so that's the context for him right now. And he basically said that his favorite way of collaborating, whether you can call it collaboration or not, is when people come together and then people jump into different people's worlds. So let me give you an example. You and I work in the same school, and you come to my room one day, and as you come in, you see me working in mathematics. The topic is measurement, or the general idea is measurement. And you see my kids using Spheros, the little robots that you can program, that you can code and use. And you see them using the Spheros to get to the heart of the measurement. Okay, so they're doing math, but they're doing it in an innovative way, a creative way, a different way, using tech. From Casey's perspective, I see that you walk in, you say, "This is wild, Roland. What are you doing?" The kids are engaged. They're interested. I talk to them. They're using the math language. You can really tell that they're getting to the heart at what you want them to learn and to be able to demonstrate. What are you doing? How is this playing out? So then I let you jump into my world. And while you're in my world, you're not telling me, you're not vying for position or power. You're simply soaking up what I'm telling you. And then you might say, "Can I involve my students somehow?" And then we start to talk about ideas. We start to come up with a way for your class to become part of the magic, if you will, that's happening in my room at this very moment. And so we can work together and we can collaborate, but you recognize that you're entering into my world. You recognize you're entering into my space and kind of what's coming from my space. Now, to flip it, the next time I walk into your room and I see something wild happening, I acknowledge by saying, "This is amazing stuff. Can I enter into your world right now and get a feel for what you're doing? And can we possibly work together?" This to me is like amazing. It's amazing because you can honor the person who's doing whatever they're doing, and nobody has to vie for position or power or influence. And I think lately in education, in my experience, people are being put together and being told you have to collaborate, but people don't want to enter into other people's worlds. People don't want to jump in, get their feet wet, then jump out and think, "Well, okay, what do I have to offer that can augment this? Not completely change this, but I can go and change it on my own, but in that person's world, I don't want to be breaking things and refixing them. I want to augment. I want to add to the power of the positive stuff that might be happening there." So I heard this and it just sat with me deeply, because as educators, especially in today's day of education, collaboration is a big deal. We want students to be able to collaborate. Teachers are expected to collaborate. And sometimes it's not collaboration. Sometimes it's one person feeding something to somebody else and they're not interested in being fed. And I want to honor what it is we're supposed to do as teachers in Ontario, right? Like, I'm not saying get rid of it. I'm saying let's honor it. Let's be honest about this. Let's do it in a way that we can learn from each other and that we can help each other with things, but that it's not, the focus moves away from, "Oh, this is great. I'm now do this." No, it's not that. That's not collaboration. That's telling somebody what to do. That's trying to infiltrate and take power. And just listening to 2 minutes and 15 seconds of that YouTube video of them podcasting about creativity, collaboration, and what Casey's doing in his new space, it just lit a fire in me, I guess. And this is a place you and I, we can talk about this. This is decoded, right? We can talk about this. We can explore this a little bit. It resonated with me. It sits well that And don't think that this doesn't happen. Just this week, I had three different colleagues of mine come into my room and say, what's going on here? And how can I apply this to what we're doing in my class? It's like, okay, well, let's talk. Like, let's collaborate. Let's talk. You see something here that you think will work with your kids. You're interested. I'm doing it. I can tell you my pitfalls, my successes. And let's just keep going back and forth and collaborate so that we can make something really awesome happen for the kids and we can learn something at the same time.
So that video, I made it to the first 1 minute, 30 seconds. I can see how the ice cube metaphor is connected with what you're saying about collaboration. And in the on-ramp, you and I were touching base on just, well, swear words, a little bit of comedy, a little bit, but looking at it from the drive, that sort of creative factor where teachers connect and build something greater. We touched on it kind of lightly where we're looking at the relationships that we've built inside social media. We made it specific to Twitter, but starting to sort of measure, is there reciprocity there? Do I feel like there's some back and forth? Maybe stepping back and asking the question, do I expect back and forth from individuals that I'm connected to? And really, this doesn't have to be about social media. It could be about the teacher down the hall from you, that relationship there. Do I believe in my heart that every single teacher should be, and I wrote down here, augmenting kind of each other's reality? So is it our duty to sort of exist in this space in some way? And I like how you shaped it as, if you do the job of creating the invitation for someone to pause in your doorway, which could lead to come on into the class and share our experience. I like the idea then of, while you're sharing our experience, are you establishing an experience for yourself? And one of the greatest ways I think to do that is how you indicated, a colleague saying, how can we connect? How can our classrooms become connected? That's a great bridge. But I think it's also in sort of moving into that space is, how can you, so it'd be the person that wants to initiate it in their own classroom. I think it's also, before you say, how do we connect? I think there has to be some sort of positioning of, I need to honor you for including me in this space. So I need to acknowledge the fact that you've kind of opened my eyes to something here that I hadn't really noticed before. And in doing so, I want to go deeper. How do we do that? How do I go deeper into my own pedagogy? But also, how do I go deeper into this experience that you just gave me? Because it's not likely I'm going to be bringing my classroom over to your class every day and have you do it. The real honoring is, can you mentor me so that I can take this and now do something maybe similar, maybe dissimilar, but how do I sort of bring this back to my classroom? I love that example. And I think it's a good pursuit within schools. I think it's a great pursuit. We've talked before about the individuals that will stand in the doorway and pass judgment and kind of keep on walking without recognizing there's two parts to this. Without recognizing the invitation to come in and play. Now that can be maybe the teacher's not sending that message out. And there's a whole lot of messages that are sent out that way. You know, we've touched on, you know, if you're locking your door, covering the window and making sure that it just stays in your little silo, then that's not really an invitation. You don't get to say, well, you can come anytime. Walking the talk sort of has to show. So that individual shows up at your open doorway, let's say, or it's cracked open enough, or you put something up, come on in and check it out. If they arrive in your doorway, recognize the invitation and then accept the invitation. I love that. You know, I've been in so many conversations around what does the school, you and I even started here, what does the whole school as a potential learning space look like? Which would also include some of the smaller spaces, which we consider are protected, which are our classrooms. So I dig that, and you got me thinking about, you know, as far as AR goes, you know, talking about those cubes. I forget even now what you said the name of those cubes were. What's the name of it? That cube you were talking about?
The Merge Cube.
Yeah, that Merge Cube. The classroom as a Merge Cube has got me fascinated now. And what does it mean to be able to hand that Merge Cube as a classroom to somebody else and then have their reality augmented in some way? How do they sort of take that experience and overlay? Because the Merge Cube in itself is just, it's a, what would you call that? It's a, it's a blank slate that happens to be, you can lay a lot of learning over it. And if the Merge Cube is the individual coming into your class, well, how do you sort of lay that learning over them so that they can take it with them? The Ice Cube, where I stopped, apologies for, and it was just timing, I got a minute in, but the powerful thing that jumped at me there is about the diffusion of the idea. And it just really got me thinking about meetings that I was in where there were some amazing leads, like the beginning of the meeting, that creativity was just like, boom, it was just like soaring. And then the reductionism of we had to get to a solution. We have to get to a solution. And all of a sudden that cube's just melting in your hand. And the funny thing in that metaphor is that it's not like melting and it stops just as a puddle on the table. It melts and it evaporates. And I've been in those places too, where you're thinking back, you're walking out just like, what happened? Why do I have a headache right now? And you backtrack and like, that started really well. Maybe at the time I think this is confusing. Everyone's jumping in. There's a lot of like pop, 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 lots of cool things going on. But then you're walking away and like you realize that the squeezing of the meeting near the tail end, it's like, wow, that totally just melted and evaporated. So that's where I kind of, it still got me thinking in that. And I haven't done much research into that podcast that you shared or the actual individual. But yeah, it's like the melting of creativity in collaboration. Not too many people are doing, you know, open discussions about, at least in my jurisdiction, not really open discussions around the trap doors and the pitfalls of collaboration, right? The loss of self in education, the loss of the individual in education. We're not doing a lot of sort of open space conversations on that.
Collaboration has its place, right? It has its place, but sometimes it doesn't belong. I'm sorry. It doesn't belong sometimes. It just doesn't. It depends on the context, depends on the people involved. I think when you start to tell people you have to do this, that kills it off for some people right away. It just does. Or you enter into the collaboration and then you quickly realize that other people who are collaborating are not collaborating. They have no interest in collaborating. Sometimes mm-hmm. that person's me, sometimes it's not, right? But you move on, you keep working on it, you keep doing what you got to do. And ultimately, I think as educators, we have to remember truly, why are we there? We're there to help these kids move on, to become better educators. And none of that's easy. None of that's easy. But the time has come for you to drop what you wanted to talk about before we shut things down this week.
You did it. There was this, I wanted to make it back to that ice cube. Yeah, you did it. Yeah. That was cool. That was really cool.
I didn't know that. That's okay. Good. I'm glad that we could do that. That was good, really good.
But I do have a question though. Sorry.
Of course.
Anyways, so here's the thing. Here's the thing that I've been thinking about. And I actually don't remember if it was on the on-ramp or when we hit record. It's a little bit of a personal belief system is whether or not is social media actually social learning. So that's kind of one part to what I'm still wrestling with. The second part to it, which might be a little bit more tricky, is can EDU grow without social media learning? And this is just, I'll leave it at that, because that's kind of like, it's at the heart of my Twitter experiment. But it's also at the heart of, if it weren't if it's not about Twitter and it's more about building better human relationships, what is the impact? What is the impact of choosing to make better human relationships and not have any of it posted, not have any of it through social media connections? So yeah, that's my thought fuel.
I'm going to leave that as homework, I guess. You were able to throw down some homework.
Like, because, yeah, or not. It's just on the table. Well, we can let that one melt on the table. We'll see if it's evaporated by next week.
Well, I guess so, eh? Well, Chris, another great podcast. Nice to see you, man. back in your basement, your man cave.
With the shark.
Back with the shark. That should be that'd be a great title for this episode. Episode 29, Back with the Shark.
We could, yeah. Looking for trouble.
I tend to be the one to manipulate that stuff. I know sometimes I have to chuckle because sometimes when I get to edit, not editing because I don't really edit, but when I get to doing the blog post for this podcast and then getting the feed to iTunes and stuff, I laugh when you beat me to it. And it's happened. So we're at episode 29. I think it's happened like half a dozen times where I'll go into YouTube to write the description, change the title. And I'm like, oh, Clough's already done it. And anyway, it just makes me laugh that I've got this idea. And so sometimes I have an idea of what I want to call the podcast. And I go in and I see that you've already named it. And I try to honor that. I think once I deleted what you put and I wrote in my own thing.
It's all good, man.
I was going to say, you obviously have, you're like, what, you did that? So it's all good. You don't really, you're chasing squirrels. So
the only place where I get triggered is when there isn't one yet. You know what I mean? Like if it was still empty and just by timing, by life, I get it. Like I'm pointing at the screen, at my TV, at the monitor. When we leave this, life goes like this is in the middle of an ongoing kind of like day. So if I happen to go back and I look at the YouTube feed and for whatever reason you're in process somewhere else, that's where I've kind of dropped those things in. But if you switch it up, I'm all good too. You know what it is? It's just to avoid having the decoded podcast episode number whatever. It feels like a blank space to be creative. You know what I mean? Like it's an invitation to put something like not, you know, just off creative in there. So, but if it's already there, I'm happy to.
Right on. Okay, Chris. Well, we'll be chatting with you sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. I saw you drawing, so hopefully you will text me or email me.
Yep.
The picture, because that was one thing I thought I was going to miss when you left Twitter, was I'm going to miss seeing those sketches that you do, because you were the one that was really pushing this podcast on Twitter. And when I say push, that term is used loosely because
promoting. It was definitely promoting.
I kind of wasn't. And now I think, okay, well, that's one less space, I guess, that that this podcast will be promoted. But I'm good with that. I don't care. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this for bigger reasons at the moment. Who knows? Maybe I'll wake up tomorrow and be like, hey, let's monetize this, which would be hilarious because that wouldn't happen. But long story short, I'm glad we can still communicate. I got to get used to sending you emails and texts now, which is fine. I mean, it's just another way. But sometimes, you know what? It'll make me think, do I really need to send this to Chris? Or am I just so used to having thrown stuff your way all the time via Twitter that I had just gotten used to doing that and wasting your time? So maybe now I'll think more about.
I'll be clear, only because this is also, it's an opportunity to kind of, this is your drive. It's funny, your drive to share, honor it, dude. Like if you want to share something with me, and I guess maybe the last time I'll apologize. I get that I've made it kind of tricky or I'm not in those exact spaces. It's never been about the bother of what's being sent to me ever, ever. You send as much, as often, as frequently as whatever. And anybody else that has my connections that are still available, It's not about changing the flow of the feed. It's changing how I'm fed. So that's the part. And you and I are still connected in ways other than this podcast. If there's anything you want to share, just share it as a link or email me. There's never, and any time of day, I really don't care. If you're still connected with me, as other people are, I'm not looking to take away the relationship. I'm just looking to sort of self-manage in some ways. And I know that's I don't have a really great way of articulating it, but I'm also never going to say to someone, don't share that with me. Don't. Like, if you find an alternate manner, I get I'm not on FB anymore and you know, it can't be a Twitter, but if you have a second, throw it to me as a link on email, or, you know, if you have my digits, then text it directly to me. Totally, totally still in it for that. In it for that. Absolutely, man.
Right on. Well, enjoy your weekend. Is it raining where you are? Because it's raining right now and it's supposed to freeze.
It's crap. The boy can't go to basketball because the basketball is in schools. It's actually in the schools here. So they canceled all the permits. So the daughter's got art and it's an independent, like it's just it's a local artist that's running it. So we didn't get any email saying it's not running. So I'll be taking her over there. Yeah, we're expecting freezing rain. So, and it is, I just looked out at the deck at the back and you can sort of see where it's part rain and part like little bouncy hail bits. So yeah, we're getting crud.
Okay. Well, stay safe.
You too, buddy. We'll talk soon. Love talking with you this week. Take care.
Same here.